You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up on Food Friday, we'll learn how to choose and prepare healthy and delicious salmon dishes.
First, $250 million in state funding was cut from the UW system in the latest budget. Those cuts affected four-year colleges around the state and also meant a loss of $3.6 million in funding for the UW Extension.
And our next guest says cutting funding from the UW Extension did more than lower its annual budget. It was also a blow to the ideas Wisconsin was built on, including the Wisconsin idea that the boundaries of the university are the boundaries of the state.
An initial draft of the budget changed the language of the university mission statement from an effort to extend knowledge and its application beyond the boundaries of its campus and to serve and stimulate society with a new goal to meet the state's workforce needs.
The UW Extension is responsible for broadcast operations, and in the interests of disclosure, that includes WPR. It also provides online degrees and works with Wisconsin's 72 counties on parenting, agriculture and economic development issues.
Joining us now is Charles P. Pierce. He's the lead writer for Esquire.com's politics blog, where he recently published the article, Scott Walker Has Destroyed What It Means to Be a Wisconsinite. Charles, welcome to the show.
No problem.
Well, why focus, among all the changes that have happened in Wisconsin over the last 5 years or so, why did UW Extension and the cuts there get your attention?
Well, I mean, I've been writing ever since I started the blog, which happened to be in October of 2011, on what's going on in Wisconsin and the use of Wisconsin, the state of Wisconsin, as kind of a lab rat for all these, experiments in extremist conservative government. So I've written about the voter laws and the uprising on the lawn of the Capitol and the transformation of Wisconsin into a right to work state. So this was just the latest manifestation of it. Of course, I lived for 5 years in Milwaukee, so I'm familiar with Wisconsin's political history. To me, this was an incredibly vivid example of the attack on the Wisconsin political tradition and what, you know, we all know is the Wisconsin idea. So that's what brought it to my attention and made it worth blogging about.
And why is UW Extension, as you see it, such a key part of the Wisconsin idea?
Well, because the Wisconsin idea was a natural outgrowth of the land-grant college system, which for us was first started during the Civil War in the 1860s and then promoted through the Smith-Lever Act later and so on and so forth, whereby the brain power of a university could be put to good use for the citizens, whether or not they went to the college or not. And the extension, of course, the extension service was the manifestation of that idea to the rural communities. The extension service is a triumph of big government. So I have a feeling that's why it was target A.
And you focused in on sort of the day-to-day experience of extension, that piece you wrote, talking about people finding out how this might affect things like 4-H, things that they might not have associated with the state budget or with the university system.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the extension service touched so many lives in so many different ways that it became sort of, you know, a fact of life for people that they took for granted, and they didn't realize. I think they realized it, but they lost touch with the fact that it touched so many different parts of their lives, especially in small towns.
So this is in a way a trickle down of these state budget cuts that were in all the headlines that people didn't necessarily see in their day to day lives.
Sure, because you know the mainstream media, because of a lot of reasons that we don't need to get into here, concentrates mainly on how the sausage gets made in the state capitol, but there's often very little follow-through unless people in the various communities raise hell about it.
Why do you see this as such a loss for Wisconsin and the unique identity of Wisconsin?
Well, because we have had a general assault over the past 30 years against the idea of a political commonwealth, against the idea that we own things in common in this country. And I think that, you know, Wisconsin was the leader in promoting that idea in the turn of the 19th into the 20th century, between President Bascom at the university and Governor La Follette and on and on and on. It was the place where a lot of these ideas were road tested, everything from the direct election of senators to the extension service. And I think as the place where these ideas got road tested, it became a test case for rolling all of this stuff back. And you hear a lot of talk about rolling back the achievements of the 1960s. These are people who want to roll back the achievements of the 1890s.
Are other states watching us here in Wisconsin, seeing how this plays out, either drawing inspiration?
I don't think there's any doubt. I think certainly the developments in North Carolina are a direct result of the success that Governor Walker's had in Wisconsin. I think John Kasich tried it in Ohio, but, you know, as you know, he tried to enact the same law about public sector unions in Ohio, but Ohio had a provision where you could put it on the ballot, and he put it on the ballot, and he got his butt kicked around the block by the people of Ohio, and that's the only reason they don't have it right now. So, yes, I think there's been a concerted effort. I think the most graphic and gory and garish and awful example is Kansas.
Talking to Charles P. Pierce, lead writer for Esquire.com's political blog, talking about his piece, Scott Walker has destroyed what it means to be a Wisconsinite. You mentioned, Charles, rolling back the 1960s, even the 1890s in Wisconsin. Has something fundamental changed about Wisconsin that allowed those changes, as you say, pioneered here, to be some of the first that are rolled back in the country?
Yeah, I left Wisconsin in 1977, so I'm doing this basically third-hand and through people that I know who stayed there and worked. I talked to a couple of Republicans, Tommy Thompson-era Republicans in Wisconsin, when I was up there for the primary. And they said that when Thompson left, when Thompson, you know, finished up being governor and then left and became he was a cabinet secretary under the first President Bush, the leadership void in the Wisconsin Republican Party was filled by really conservative people, much more conservative even than Tommy Thompson was. And Tommy Thompson was a Reaganite before it was popular. And what happened was you wound up with an extremely radicalized Republican Party. And at that point, you know, the techniques of conservative movement conservative campaigns came into the state and were remarkably successful. And I think that was the beginning of the transformation to what we see now.
But can't we say that to some extent the people of Wisconsin are embracing this message? Governor Walker's won three elections?
No, I don't know. I tend to, people will say he was elected three times in 2 years. I tend to put the recall outside of that because, a lot of the recall vote near Zagatel was against the idea of the recall, but he was reelected. I don't ever, in anything I write, take voters off the hook for the unintended consequences of what happens when they cast their votes or don't cast their votes. I think we do, in fact, in this country, get the government we deserve, and to an extent, the government we ask for.
So, why are people asking for that government here?
I have no idea. I don't think many of them are right now. I don't think you'll see. The governor run for re-election. I'd be very surprised if he did. That having been said, on the state legislative level, it's still it's a hard road to push. It's a hard road to push up the hill. There are a lot of dynamics going on. And some of which I find inexplicable.
Some critique in the state of the Democratic Party saying even if you don't like the Republicans' message, they have a clear and cohesive message. Democrats, a lot of people are saying, don't. They haven't provided a viable alternative except anti-Walker.
True. I mean, I think that at least from the outside, the Democratic Party in Wisconsin has been very slow to respond to exactly how radical a conservative Governor Walker is. His friends in the radical conservatives Governor Walker and his friends in the legislature are. Certainly they've come to know it now, and we'll see what happens going forward.
I saw a quote, I think it's from Grover Norquist, the national conservative activist advocate, saying Governor Walker came in and he did the ceiling of what we could hope for from a conservative governor. Now that represents, he says, the floor for governors in other states and for potential Republican presidential candidates. Has he changed, Governor Walker, the national conversation?
I think he probably already did, but I can't imagine, given what's going on in Kansas, where, and I would argue with Grover Norquist that Governor Walker has not in any way come in and established a ceiling. What's going on in Kansas is an utter disaster, and it's far beyond even what Governor Walker's done. So I would say Governor Brownback is probably as far as you can. I mean, hope is as far as you can go, and all we can hope for is the Democrats get smart enough to swing the pendulum back in the other direction.
We'll leave it there for now. Charles, thanks a lot for taking the time.
Thanks a lot. It's good to talk to folks in Wisconsin.
That was Charles P. Pierce, lead writer for Esquire.com's politics blog.
Coming up after the news, it's time for Food Friday, and we're going to learn how to cook some great salmon dishes, also how to prepare the salmon and learn about the different types of salmon, because it turns out there's a lot of them. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.